Welcome back, guys, to the Mindful Edge podcast. I'm Cecil.
Hey, guys, I'm Dr. P.
And today we're going to kind of have an unhinged and unapologetic conversation today. We also have a guest, but we'll get into that in a minute. But today we're going to talk about modeling what it looks like to converse, but possibly disagree, but also wrestle with ideas without disrespect.
Yes. So today we are joined by Sheena Barnes. She is a community activist. She is a community leader. And so she gets to ask us anything about leadership, accountability, education, identity, all of the things. Nothing is off the table.
Here's the fun part. No one knows what these questions are
beforehand. Yeah, we don't know.
So these are just like questions on the fly. So as you're listening to this podcast today, these are not pre-spoken, pre-ideas. We don't know what she's going to ask us today.
Yeah, now I'm like, why do we sign up for this? But we're going to trust her in the moment. But before we get to her questions of us, we want to ask you a few questions, Sheena. Is that okay? But before we get to that, why don't you introduce yourself to all of our family and friends?
Well, hello, kings, queens, and royalty. My name is Sheena Barnes. I am a sitting, current, and powerful school board member for Toledo Public Schools, fifth largest district in Ohio. I am an entrepreneur with Just Acts Consulting, and I'm also the director of People and Culture for Equality Ohio.
She's an amazing person.
She like, is. She's a sweetheart. She is.
If people are listening, like, she is really, really dope.
Now, listen, next week when we're on, I'm going to, what does she say? Good morning, kings and queens. I'm going to do that. I'm
kings, queens, and royalty, because we all come
kings,
from somewhere.
Queens and royalty. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I should go ahead and trademark that.
You might have to. After this episode, you might have to. Nobody use that but Sheena.
Exactly. Period.
Okay. Period. Okay. So, Sheena, one question that I have for you. What is one misconception people have about you?
Oh, that I'm mean, that I'm angry, and that I am just short, when a lot of people don't understand the tabs that are opened up in my head and the bigger picture I have to look at when we're talking about education, and it's currently being attacked like so many other, you know, bases for resources for our youth. They don't understand the constant, like, I have to see the bigger picture so I understand the importance of the situation for you. Yeah. But I'm thinking about 19,000 plus other kids, okay. 4,000 plus staff members. So when I come off to be more direct, people think, oh, she just mean, she's just short. And it's like, honey, I'm tired. I got three kids of my own. Mm-hmm. I got to pay bills. Mm-hmm. The gas bill is gassing, okay?
Oh, my gosh. Let's not even start on that gas bill.
Listen.
So, yeah. So, you know, people just get that, you know, that viewpoint of that clip of what's the interaction versus the bigger storytelling of my daily life. Like, yeah. I'm putting in 12, 15 hours a day for all three things I just mentioned. And for school board, we only get up to $2,000. So, you know,
she's telling us something we didn't know.
Yeah.
So when they say you're rich.
Oh, yeah. I love to hear about how much money I'm making and not getting. That's the best part.
It's always the fun part, right?
Yeah, I think that's true for all of us, right?
Listen, they think therapists balling. I don't know why they think that.
Right. It's like we ball into the budget.
Yeah. Exactly. So I guess this is a great way to ask you this second question, which is, what part of leadership drains you the most?
Mm. Oh, that's a very layered question for me. Misconception, okay. Misinformation, and then the lack of care when the house is on fire.
Ooh. Ooh.
Is what we're kind of experiencing right now. I've been in office for 6 years, and I've been like, hey, the house is smoking. We should check this out. And it was like, oh, you're overreacting. But now the house is on fire. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, we got the water hoses out there, right? The advocates and the mm-hmm. people in the situation. And they're like, what you're doing?
I'm like, putting out the fire.
The same thing I was doing 6 years ago. Like, you can help me. Help
exactly.
you. Help me.
Exactly.
So I think that is very draining, because you have to also understand that access to knowledge is purposely you know, disconnected from the major groups, you know, when you're thinking about paying bills or your sickness or your parents or whatever the case is, you're not really focusing or can't focus on everyday things like education, being under attack for 6 years until they hit your home or hit your neighborhood. And so trying to give grace, I think sometimes when grace is not given is very draining. Trying not to use beautiful words to describe how sometimes you may feel about these things. And I think it's always, you know, an empty well. The more you put water in, it just keeps draining out, you know, from losing kids to gun violence or street violence to seeing youth who are unhoused or experiencing homelessness. And, you know, it's just that one you have met that day versus the bigger, you know, number out there that needs the resources. Those things keeps me up at night.
Yeah. Okay. And one final question before we turn it over to you. What keeps you doing the work? What keeps it going for you?
Oh, my, it's the youth. It's the youth. The adults, woo, but the youth, you know, to when I go in the classrooms and I'm introducing myself and I can say, I'm a school board. And they're like, what is that? Yeah. But I'm like, oh, you know, Dr. Durant, I'm his boss. They're like, oh, wow. Because I think, especially for the students in our community who look like me or identify with my identities, to say, you can do this too. You can be Dr. Durant's boss too one day if you apply yourself, take up opportunities and network. To tell them my background growing up from Flint, Michigan, and the poverty and the gun violence. And hey, look, I've been in the White House 2 times, you know, well, different president, of course. you know, I went to Harvard, you know, those things is like, I can do it. So the inspiration that I'm hoping I give to the students keeps me doing the work. And then also my babies are in the district. And so I want to make sure they have, you know, access to high quality education. And the other things that I do is make sure everybody has a welcoming space to call home.
Yeah, nice. I love it. Okay, we're turning it over to you now.
I'm sorry, I'm sweating bullets.
Okay, let's take a deep breath.
I think
breath,
I went
Cecil.
Easy. I think I went easy, not too deep, but we can, I want to probably do follow-up questions.
Okay, who's going first, me or Cecil?
I kind of want to do a double.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah,
okay.
Let's
all
go.
Right.
Okay. Let's go.
Let's go.
Go big or go home.
Home.
Right.
Hoo-wee. Okay.
So I see you both in the leadership. So in leadership, we often are expected to hold everyone else together. But what does it look like to you intentionally holding space for your own mental health without guilt or apology?
Did she talk about our whole week this week?
This week, last week, last
week,
year.
This last year, last month. Ooh.
Since 2020.
You want to go first? We said almost at the same time. Like, we was twins.
You know, I'll go. It's hard. I'll be very transparent. It's hard to hold space for yourself, especially when you're in a community as small as what we're in, because everyone knows everyone. So sometimes you feel this pressure that you have to put on. And that putting on is what drains you in the midst of all the other stuff. Like you mentioned, you have kids. I got kids. I got bills. I got all these things going on, and not knowing who to trust, you know. And Cecil and I have been transparent. I trust him. And there's maybe one or two other folks that I can go to, but I know we're all in the same season. So then I don't want to further drain them. And so sometimes I am pulling away when people don't see me as much on social media. And I need it for my, you know, for my business. Like, so yeah, it's this tug of war that you have that is probably the hardest part to deal with.
I would say it's like walking that tightrope above a sky build, like a sky building, right? Like, and you're trying to balance it every single day. For me, I'm in the season of grief. So my season of grief right now kind of pulls me away from social interaction. And it's intentional sometimes. But right now I'm in the process of finding my own therapist. So I think that's the best way to help me with balancing that. But outside of that, also, it's simply trying to wake up every single day, remind yourself, like, find something to be joyous about.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the hardest part of waking up, mm-hmm. is knowing that I have to wake up and do all these things, mm-hmm. and they're not going anywhere, mm-hmm. right? The bills don't go anywhere.
right.
The job doesn't go anywhere because you got to pay the bills with the job, mm-hmm. Or the job's pay the bills.
Right.
So you just got to wake up and remind yourself of the one joyous thing. I always try to have a morning routine.
Yeah.
If it's like grabbing some music to listen to while I'm brushing my teeth, or looking in the mirror and telling myself, like, it's going to be okay today. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not going to be okay, then I'm not going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like I said a couple of days ago, I was on the cusp of I'm not okay and I'm okay, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. In the same day.
Yeah, I saw that post. Yeah. That hit deep.
Yeah, because
I just cut Facebook up. I was like, I don't want to see this.
Because I needed to let the world know, like, I'm okay. I can still laugh and smile, but I've cried this morning before. I made this post. So it's just one of those things. I think it's a balancing act.
I want to thank both of you for sharing and being unapologetic, right?
Yeah.
Because it's very hard for people in leadership, especially Black people, because we were told that we have got to suffer in silence. So thank you for sharing that with me and the listeners as well. Look, I'm not going to come this one.
We love it.
Listen.
So, okay, the next question is a more of a strategy question, and I hope to build off of this. It's how do we move our current society from a trauma-informed response care to a trauma-responsive care type of mindset? We're talking about education and just space in general. Because I can know how to give you resources if you experience trauma, but how do I first analyze you, knowing this trauma might be impacted because of your zip code, race, gender identity, sexual orientation, and all those things. So how can we move that shift so we can get better analysis to create quicker responses for resources?
I think listen before response. Mm. I think trauma is a listening process. I think a lot of times we want to give a answer to trauma, right? We want to say, yeah, this is your trauma, versus asking you, is this your trauma? Right? We label something trauma without even asking the person, what did they experience? So I think first asking and listening. We are a society of responses, right? I'm listening to you, but I'm ready to respond to you. I'm not listening to actually hear you and understand where you're coming from. And so that's where a lot of misunderstanding comes from trauma, right? Well, if I listen to the kid that just walked in and realized his behavior has nothing to do with my classroom, it has to do with the fact that he didn't eat yesterday, right? If I would took the time to just listen to him, I could find that out. Or take a time to walk with a friend and realize they lost someone the last 3 weeks of their life, right? And we say, that was a trauma, let's listen to you. I think listening right now is not happening at all,
right?
I think we're distracting ourselves with other things, which then also causes more trauma. Right, because then we're distracting and removing that. But I think first listening and actually understanding and comprehending, because comprehension is low now, right? We can read something and not actually comprehend what's happening. So I think listening, having comprehension and understanding will definitely help with that trauma understanding and trauma response, because you can't respond to something if you're not listening to it.
Yeah. That's a mic drop.
No, see, listen, when it comes to that mental health stuff, Cecil is on it, okay? Sometimes I have to say, okay, what I'm saying is like mental health jargon. It's not the real thing. And I have to call him like, is this true? And he's like, no, that's I agree with that. And one thing that I think bothers me about this space is that we no longer know who our experts are. And so some of the things that are being implemented from non-experts. And when I say non-experts, those that haven't studied it, those that don't know the theoretical frame behind it. And so it complicates when someone is in the midst of a trauma response, something going on. It's like, who do I go to? And oftentimes Cecil and I talk about this. That's why there's a mistrust in, let's say, the mental health field. There's a mistrust in education because people are like, well, who are you? I already went to a therapist. And it's like, well, no, you really didn't go to a therapist. You went to someone who had, let's say, a certification. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They don't know, because there's levels to, yep. like I always say, there's levels to this. And being, and Cecil telling me there's therapists, there are some that can prescribe meds. Mm-hmm. There are some that cannot prescribe meds. There are some, what is it,
psychiatrist
that goes to medical school.
Psychiatrist, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Psychiatrist. So we don't know our experts. Mm-hmm. And so when we need help, the people that need the help, they don't know where the hell to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they also conflate those with expertise to behavioral health, mental specialist. Anyway.
we can go on a long tangent. I can personally go on a long tangent with that.
I do the same thing in my whole, the leadership, the consulting space. Mm-hmm. It frustrates me so much because I'm like, they don't even know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. They just got some buzzwords and went to ChatGPT, and everyone can put together something.
Yes.
But when it comes to the theory, and I always say, you know, with change, there are different diagnostic change models that I use that are 50, 70, 100 years old, and you just modify them mm-hmm. to the context, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know our experts, and so we're all in this mix. But then guess what the experts do? Because we're so tired. We're so drained.
No, the deuces up.
We withdraw more mm-hmm. than, so the loudest person gets the airplay, and the loudest person is not always the expert.
Are you reading my journal? Is that what you're talking about?
I think you was reading our journal because you came in here all up our street.
Sometimes the most polished person becomes the expert because they're popular.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of
they have the right tone.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They are approachable.
They play the part. Mm-hmm. They play the part, yes.
Oh, okay. I'm going to close my journal when I get done writing because what is going on? Okay, so the last question is going to be like really like futuristic, okay? Because everybody always asks you to talk about what would you say to your younger self.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I want to know what would you say to your elder self.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's I've never thought about this question.
Never thought about this.
We don't see the future. We only the present and the past. I want to start looking at the future. We are futuristic, okay? Mm.
You know what? And that brings me. I've been revisiting. I'm reading Octavia Butler's work. She was such a futurist. Mm-hmm. Everything she talked about, I'm like, oh my gosh. It was so far off though. So my future self, oh, I might have to go in my journal on that. I don't know, because we live so in the present and in the past
mm-hmm.
that what does tomorrow look like? Oh, you gotta.
I wonder if we struggle with that because we're in survival.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
It was a question from my therapist, actually.
Ah. So I'm like, this is what I'm like, okay. Now I'm thinking, I'm sitting here like, okay, therapist
survival.
Kicked in, like, where does this come from?
Yeah. Unpacking.
Yeah. But I think for me, as you said it, the first thing I thought was my future millionaire self, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know I will be a millionaire at one point in time in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like knowing that, I just want to be able to tell my future self to, like, don't help everyone with their handout.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
All right. Yeah. And that doesn't even talk about just money.
Yep.
Like, we're talking even mental money, right? Because sometimes we give.
I'm going to steal that.
We give time out to people that we don't get back from, mm-hmm. right? Mm. So we're constantly giving out our time, our energy, our emotional fortitude, if you want to call it. But they're not able to give it back to us.
Yep. Yeah.
And so we miss out on things for ourselves because we're busy giving for others. Mm-hmm. So I think as I get older and my older self is looking at me, he's probably laughing because he's going to probably be a older man who sits on a chair in his living room when his grandkids come in and ask for money, right?
Yeah,
to sit on his lap. And I'm giving money anyway because that's just what I'm going to do. But also remembering how I got there. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm a person of now who will go back to my old community, living in the community I live in and where I was raised and go back. And I feel like I want to do that even as an old man to give back to what molded me to that point.
Mm.
I don't think no level of money will ever change me
as
a person. I don't think any level of getting older will change me as a person. Mm-hmm. I think I'll always be who I am today. It'll just give more money. I can have more resources.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it would be me not being as humble as well.
You get more unapologetic.
I'll get more unhinged, right?
You're right.
And not really.
I'm a little nervous.
So yeah, I would say that, but I think a lot of times the harder part about answering that question is we're just living in survival right now, right? Mm-hmm. And every single day, it's how can I just make sure I wake up and make it to the end of the day?
Right.
Yeah. Right. No, I totally agree.
I woke up this morning probably about 3 a.m., yet last night was just a bad night for me. Mm-hmm. I was hoping I got some news about an RFP. I was like, I know I'm the one. And then it didn't come through. So it just threw off my whole day yesterday. And I woke up like 3 o'clock and I was like, all I need is just one. Mm-hmm. Like just one big break. And it does. It goes. You have to do those things. So my shirt says, just trust God and chill. Because I felt myself. I didn't want to go into this downward spiral like, oh, my gosh, I didn't get that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the things. But my future self, I really want to be a philanthropist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That is my end goal. And so I looked at that opportunity to help that was going to help me get there. Because I just want to be able to have enough money to be able to give it out and to help. And I want a center where folks can come. But it's not going to be a hospital. Like, you have to, we will, you know, sow into your dreams, but what is the end goal? Like, how do you always give back?
Right.
Because we have a lot of people that have come from areas where we've come from and they've made it and we don't ever see them again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be one of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to ask y'all to do some homework because y'all both said what y'all will do, not what you would say to yourself. Because we're so in the work mode that we can't give even ourselves flowers.
Oh my goodness, Sheena.
Okay.
Yeah.
Psychology major too, so I'm just saying.
See y'all, see what she did to us? She gave us homework.
Even a therapist.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to hold ourselves, call ourselves in. Yeah. So I, you know, that when I was asked that question, I was like, the same thing.
Yeah.
I want to be stable, paying off bills, da 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 da. And it was like, that's not what I asked you. I was like, you're still doing work. I was like, And so I had to sit and sit in that. And I said, I think I would tell my elder self, thank you for trusting me. Thank you for trusting me when you knew I didn't have any options or knew what to do, but you still trusted me to be on my own. You didn't give up. So it was a lot, but it took me 2 weeks to get to that. Ah, this is what I would say to myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's your homework.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm like, dang.
She got us.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
No, we appreciate that. You know, because when you have other smart, and that's my biggest thing, iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. And so you need people to come into your space and give you what you need in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I accept, thank you. I receive
100%.
That.
It's also one of those things where you want to make sure you're not the smartest person in the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That was like that was a great example of that. Because we was like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. And she like, psych.
She like, gotcha.
Yeah. Okay.
No, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How do we want to?
You done got us all.
They got me out here trying. I'm going to be in the car sitting there like, you know what? What would I say to myself?
I say it took me 2 weeks. So I got 2 weeks.
Okay, okay. Two weeks.
Okay.
Let's switch to asking you some growth questions.
Okay.
What bias did you have to confront for yourself?
Because of where I came from, you know, being born and raised in Flint, Michigan. And at the time, it was, when I was growing up, it was the number one city under 100,000 population for homicides.
Okay.
So you have this expectation that you're only going to make it to 22. Mm. Being a teenage parent at 15, and although my parents, I have both my parents, which is rare, in my neighborhood, we only had two families with two of my parents. And that was my whole entire class. So,
oh, wow.
The Sharps and the Barnes. That was it. It made me limit myself. And it was to the point to where even now I have to unlearn when I get opportunities. So I am currently sitting on another board, or caucus, I guess it's different, on the Harvard Pride Caucus.
Okay.
And I'm in the room, like you said, with people from Harvard. And I'm like, well, I'm not smart enough. I don't know. And I had to unlearn that, you know, or when I meet someone in power, like whether it's a congresswoman or a congressperson or a aide to the former president, and I'm talking to them, they, hey, Sheena, I'm like, you know my name? Like, what? I'm like, you know, and I have to say, no, I'm in the room because I earned to be in the room.
Yeah.
Not I'm a token or they just was looking for a black gay girl to come in and, you know, pick that quota. I was like, no. I still have to fight with that.
Okay.
You know, that I am enough.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the biggest one, I think, daily.
Okay.
Whether that's even going to the local boardroom when I want to say something, I'm like, no, I'm enough. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the biggest bias for myself that I have to overcome. And then also living out loud is revolutionary.
It is.
Oh, my goodness.
Not trying to shrink myself because of other people's comfort. And I'm still, you know, I'm in that 40 effort life right now. So it's getting easier.
Okay.
However, it's still like, okay, ooh, well, you know, they don't think you're the loud, black, angry girl, you know, woman. And it's like, but no, but I have a right to be angry because it's an injustice going on. Otherwise, I'll be smiling. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those two things I think every day. Every day.
Those are two powerful things, I think. In the sense of you being able to say that out loud, because there's somebody who's going to listen to this and realize that they weren't enough until they heard what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. That's why I live out loud and unapologetic, so the next person can give themselves permission to do the same.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
And I will say, Sheena and I met, I don't even know how long. But I will say she definitely lives what she says, because I remember I wanted to go to
story
this,
time.
I don't know what event we were going to. Maybe it was Flaunt.
Okay.
And I couldn't figure out where. Okay, so y'all know I'm bougie. Like, if there's not a parking spot up front, I go home. And I was calling Sheena, like, there's not a parking spot. And she was like, no. She walked across the street. Mm-hmm. We parked my car. Because I was like, well, who's going to walk me back to my car when this is over? She was like, me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh. So she came and got me, my little princess self, walked me in, and then sat me in the front row. Mm-hmm. Like, with all her friends, her daughter. Yeah. Because I was going by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know. And she's like, you're an ally. Come on. I'm like, I know, but I don't know anybody. And it was the best night I had. We walked like, what was that, two blocks?
Yeah.
I had on heels and everything.
And I had on heels. I don't do heels.
She doesn't do heels.
Yeah. So I was kind of like,
yeah.
What's that? That helping people?
Oh, yeah.
and I thanked her the whole way because I saw it on her face. Mm-hmm. But she was like, I invited her here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make sure you're good. And I always remember that about her. And then we've also had some good conversation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't get to talk much, but.
So we're doing the work.
But
it's nice to know that I have people in the community that won't hold their opinions for polish.
Oh, no.
And it's a breath of fresh air. When you get to those levels,
mm-hmm.
you like you said, who to trust, who you can talk to. You can't even have honest conversations. So I appreciate both of you for being able to be like, no, I see that too.
Yeah.
It's for not real. Just you.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Ooh, this has been good. I mean, you, to be honest, you really got us still stuck on what we tell our future self. But I guess we will end with, what is one thing that in leadership that almost broke you, but you came out of?
Because of the hunger to advocate for our youth and LGBTQ plus Ohioans. It put my children in danger. I was receiving death threats from every extremist groups across the country. I made it into Bart Brecht's, which is the National Nazi News with Steve Bannon and them. That was on the front cover, you know, Queer Queen of Toledo. For speaking my opinion, that wasn't even, of course, they spent it, but, you know.
Yeah.
But then realizing I have to talk to the FBI about, you know, if this happens, my son, who's autistic, I mean, I'm also autistic, but my son is younger and don't know how to mask like I have had to. So he's still raw and living, and I love that. But now if we get swatted, what this means for a 12-year-old, six, you know, black boy who's autistic, he's going to understand what's going on. Is you know, is something's going to happen. I have an 18-year-old in the house. Are they going to know that's my kid or think that's a gunman, you know? Yeah. So all those things was going in my head, and my daughter, you know, leaving work at night by herself, realizing that the work that I'm doing to try to make change created chaos for my kids who didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
You know, that was the hardest. And actually being honest and transparent, I was like, okay, after this election, I mean, after this term, I'm done. I'm done. And something happened. My daughter, my kids came to me, was like, yeah, but who gonna talk about that now? Who gonna do this now?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be president, but you need to do something because you ain't finna run us crazy talking about it. And I was like, okay, let's go. Let's fight. Let's keep fighting. And, you know, they gave me the permission to keep going for it. And that helped. But during that time of seeing people use racist terms to describe my kids and tell me how they would harm my kids, that was hard. Yeah. And it still kind of bothers me, you know, to think about, you know, the possibility.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, these people are everywhere.
Yeah.
And some are literally in our district.
Yeah.
It's not like they in California somewhere. They got to get a plane ride. No, they around here, you know. Yeah. So that was the hardest, I think. And it definitely, it did break me. I won't say almost. It did. It did for a while where I was just like, I'm not going nowhere. I'm not talking to nobody. Because I didn't want to put them at risk, you know? Right. So I isolated myself. I'm just now getting back out. This is probably like the third thing that I've done in the community since then. Yeah, seriously. Like, so it was hard. Like, I'll go to get my hair cut. That's a must.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
my nails done. But other than that, cause I was always thinking about what if they do this thing now and I'm around people I care for. Mm-hmm. So I'm just slowly getting back out here. And, you know, like I said, living is revolutionary. And I love making people, I think I can say, pissed off for living unapologetically. And that's what I'm going to keep doing.
Good. Yeah, no, I love it. And thank you. I didn't even know with asking that question that you were even going through that. And I kind of knew because when I was in the height of that, doing that work, I also was getting threats and they were calling clients of mine. So I get it. I don't know why I didn't think that it.
I mean, that's the world we live in. That's why we got to keep fighting for change.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. So let's end with one action.
Besides your homework.
But we're going to put it on other folks now.
Yeah.
What's one action that adults should take this week that will help them begin to live out loud so that their walk in life is revolutionary?
Honestly, show up. Whether that's at community meetings, town hall, city council, school board meetings, show up so you can get the information so you can then advocate for whatever that is for yourself as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Showing up definitely creates empowerment, but also accountability that we need to make our community back to that village.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we got so stuck in making a community that we forgot the village.
Mm-hmm.
So showing up.
I like that.
Right. I like it.
Because I'm a big advocate of if you just show up, that's the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The hardest part is about just showing up.
Yeah,
because when I got that text, I was like, it's Dr. PNC, so okay.
Yeah. No, you were the first person that I thought of, and it was selfishly because I hadn't been able to lay my eyes on you. So I was like, well, we're gonna get her get her in the booth and...
Well, the universe knew I needed to get out and see good people and be around good energy. So, yeah, I appreciate it.
Yep, and we needed it because Cecil and I are both in our grief season, so we need to be around good people. I got about, like,
another week, I'll be back to normal.
Well, what is normal? Right.
No such thing.
There's no such thing. Right. There's no such thing.
I'll be functioning for people not to ask me what's wrong.
There you go. Yes. Yes.
So I like that. Functioning enough for people not to ask me what's wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I live it every day.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For coming and sharpening our iron. You gave us what we needed, and we know we needed it, but we weren't going to ask for it.
And so. Also made us think outside the box today.
Oh, so, heck for sure. Yeah, for sure.
My pleasure.
So
thank you guys for showing up to listening to The Mindful Edge. We want to give a big shout out to our dope producer, Chris.
Oh, heck yeah.
Whoop, whoop.
And if you want to catch us on any of your listening podcasts, along with www.gte.org/The Mindful Edge. I'm Cecil.
I'm Dr. P. Love y'all double time.
Love you guys.
WGTE. Voices around us.